Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Portland City Hall. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council meeting. We were actually officially in recess, so we are now back in order. Carla, could you please read item number 80?
Mm-hmm. Proclaim February 2020 to be Black History Month.
Colleagues, Black History Month recognizes and pays tribute to the contributions of African Americans and those of the African diaspora have made to the American history in their struggles for freedom and equality. It helps deepen our understanding of African Americans' shared history, and we uplift the struggle that many went through during this month. This annual celebration of achievements is also a time of recognition. We must promote the influential role that African Americans have played in helping shape our society and recognize their contributions. I understand that this year's theme is voting inequality, and I think that we can all agree this country has a history of minimizing, stifling, and eliminating the ability of African Americans to vote and to have their votes count, which is why I'm encouraged to see everyone here, including our young people, sharing with us today how we can move forward together, advocating for not only Black voters, but for those, all of those who are eligible to vote. With that, I'd like to call up David Grenfield to begin our presentation. Thank you for being here. Thank you and welcome.
That's got to be hard to
Hello. Hi. And that is on. Yes, it is. Good.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
You may want to bring it a little closer.
Okay. As you said, hi, I'm David Grenfield. It's my first time speaking in here. I'm an employee of the Parks Bureau. I'm a botanic specialist with our natural area parks. I help lead stewardship activities and coordinate environmental education work. And I'm a sponsor for our youth conservation crew. And I will just add, first and only Black botanic specialist with the city. Thank you. So
you said that you're the only one.
So yeah, we're clapping for the first, not the only.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say
the first, not the only.
Yeah,
we should separate
that,
those two things.
And with me at the table here today, we have Kayla Bird, who is a senior at De La Salle North Catholic High School, a basketball player involved with our Black Male Achievement Program, a part of Young Entrepreneur Business Week ambassador team, and has done internships here at City Hall and currently with Wieden & Kennedy.
He was actually an intern in the mayor's office. We greatly miss you. Thank you for all of your contributions.
And then in the middle, we have Shannon Olive, who is born and raised here in Portland, a mother of two boys, and a part of many local social justice movements that are working to make Oregon a better place for low-income communities of color. And currently the founder and president of a new women's organization called Women First Transition and Referral Center, which is working to serve women in reentry and recovery and supports them to rebuild their lives and to succeed. And then right next to me, a dear friend, Bhutan, is a student filmmaker at PSU and a producer of some really dynamic and inspiring dance videos that you can find online. A member of Portland's Kiki Ballroom community and the House of Flora. I know there's a few folks in the crowd. And she's also training in leading conversations around racial justice and a strong advocate for intersectionality in professional spaces. So I work with our City African American Network And we're an affinity group through deep, diverse, empowered employees of Portland. And there's somewhere around 820 African-American employees here at the City of Portland. And it's the CAN network that is the kind of backbone of all of the Black History Month programming that happens for the City of Portland. There's a small group of about 10 or 12 of us that put on all of the city-sponsored events around Black History Month. And here we are in January, just making sure we do it right before the month starts. We've worked together with Commissioner Hardesty to put together this proclamation. And, you know, as a part of this proclamation, we wanted to bring together three community leaders to speak on their experience here in Portland. I've got a little bit I'll tell you about our reception that we're doing afterwards, but I will hold those comments until after we hear from our speakers.
Excellent. Thank you.
Great. So first, we've got Caleb Bird.
All right. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey. You can bring that closer if it's more comfortable.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Thank you. Greetings, Mayor Wheeler and council members, Udaly and Hardesty. I am Caleb Bird, and I want to thank you for allowing me the time to speak with you on the importance of voting for young men like myself and young people in general, and all those to come in the future. As a young Black man growing up in Northeast Portland, I have been raised by two strong Black women, my mom and my grandma. I have witnessed them work in ways that allows me to participate completely in my scholastic endeavors and athletic endeavors, and pursue multiple internships, including spending time at the mayor's office. What I have learned is what the poet Maya Angelou tells us: I am my ancestors' wildest dreams. And that representation does matter. On many occasions, my grandmother would ask me, what's the mayor like, or have you ran into Commissioner Hardesty? tell her I said hello. My grandmother says hello.
I said hi back, right?
Yeah,
feeling the love.
This warmed my heart, knowing that my grandmother cared so much, mm-hmm. knowing that she had her grandson involved in the community at such a high level. And representation does matter. It really does. Yet I know for young men like me, negative representation does exist as well. It's abundant around me. If you look at the statistics, we know people of African American descent are nearly in every negative statistical category you can track. Health outcomes, educational outcomes, wealth disparities, representation in the justice system, it's everywhere. This could easily get me down, it really could, but I know the tide is shifting. I know things are changing. I am the change. And you all give me hope. You all give me hope. I recognize the leadership of Charles Jordan and Dick Bogle. I know how important the election of our own Commissioner Hardesty really is, not only in a political sense, but we know that we are better when those who represent the vast interest of Portlanders are have a chance to influence our lives. Which brings me to why I'm here, to vote. It is something that young Black men hold dear to our heart. We see how important it is. We read about how voter disenfranchisement.
Say that three times.
Thank you. Has discouraged voters in the country. We understand how redistricting encourages the voting outcomes and voting outcomes to change, and we have seen how some of our elected leaders have been in their positions all of our lives. We are more disconnected while having the most access to technology that connects us all. We have transportation options that make our commutes shorter, but also affect our environments, which also cause our environments to suffer as a result. My friends and I are very aware that we are not engaged like we should be for the things that concern our collective futures. So for us to be heard and us to be involved, we must vote. And we need you all to encourage us to vote. I will commit this to you all. I will use my social media platforms and my voice to advocate for all youth to vote. I will make sure that no matter who they are or what their vote is, that their vote does matter. I understand the legacy of those who have been left out. I know what it means coming from a community that has not been heard. I know how to vote. I know how voting is one huge way to making sure everybody is heard. I need you all. I need the entire council support in making sure youth, and specifically black youth, feel heard, supported, and know that their vote, regardless of what it is important. In this action, I reflect on all youth leaders who have encouraged us to speak up about the things that are important to us. As a young minister led a civil rights movement to change our nation, a young monk started the Protestant Reformation, a young woman reclaimed the territories of France, and a young woman currently asks all nations to consider their carbon impact. These leaders inspired me to call on our established leaders, like you all, to live up to our highest aspirations, to be seen, to be heard, to be encouraged to vote. I hope we can count on you to educate and encourage our youth, and specifically our black youth, to vote.
Hear, hear.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you,
Tom.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Shannon Olive, and I'm standing here today on behalf of myself, my community, and the organization in which I am the founder, president for, again, Women's First Transition and Referral Center. We are a grassroots organization serving women transitioning from prison, women in recovery, and women who's recovering from trauma. Our primary focus is African-American women, helping them to rebuild their lives so that they too can become successful and productive citizens of our community. It's been 16 years since I have joined the social justice movement. What I have learned then and still works today is the 3 E's model. Under the leadership of Commissioner Hardesty at Oregon Action back in 2004, where I come from. First, number one, education. It's important for an individual or people to get involved to understand its impact and what can be done about it. If I don't do something about what will happen, or if I do, what will happen? I'm talking about voting. Two, engage. Now, the individual or people have expressed their willingness to stay involved. They're attending meetings, and they have stepped out of their comfort zone. It's time to take action. People feel good when they feel they are a part or belong to something. They get great results. They stay engaged. They keep coming back. Number three, empowered. This is when you can take it a step further. They begin to share information with their neighbors, their family, to get them on board. They become inspired, and they want to take a lead to be a part of change, and they develop their leadership, such as myself. As a leader in this community, I said I will not stop until change comes. Thus, there's still work to do. For change to come, everyone must be held accountable, including decision makers. We are speaking about the vote today, and where I come from, our communities have been and still are disconnected. My ask is before decisions are made, we as the people must be included at the table, a part of the decision-making process. I can guarantee you if you give us the opportunity and follow the 3 E's model prior to voting, there will be a greater turnout of our communities voting, and your decision-makers will start making better decisions. Why? Because you know more about the constituents in which you serve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Button, and my pronouns are she, her, hers, or they, them, theirs. I'm here very casually as a member of the Black LGBTQ community. I stand in agreement with everything that was said before me, and I applaud. And I guess what I would like to express today is not only the need to have more encouragement within our communities to vote, but also more encouragement of trainings for whoever ends up in our leadership positions to think intersectionally and to study very regularly implicit bias, as well as to actively break down the conditioning that it has taken for us to get to where we are in our country today, and understanding that this isn't something that happens in just like a workshop or two. This is something that needs to be happening around the clock, given that there are so many different things that are reinforcing these biases. And I personally have suggestions of where those trainings can come from. I'm a big fan of the Center of Equity and Inclusion. That's where I go to study. And I learn about leading conversations on equity and race, and how to do so with navigating white guilt and those uncomfortable things that come up, and just like knowing that there are ways that folks can orient themselves to center the comfort of, not only the comfort, but also the prosperity of the Black and otherwise communities of color in this city without centering the comfort of whiteness. And that is my request that, of course, more Black and brown leaders end up in leadership positions, but also that even the ones who aren't Black or brown, that they are required to study and break down these biases that they carry, or that you carry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, everybody went on the 3-minute end of the 3 to 10 minute window we had. So we've got a little bit extra time.
That doesn't never happen here.
You know, we saved some time for some comment from y'all. So if there's anybody that you want to.
I got comments. Who wants to go first? I feel like you should wrap
well,
it up.
Well, I want to put Shannon on the spot because I know the answer to the question I'm about to ask Shannon.
Oh.
So, Shannon, this month is really focused on voter registration, right?
Mm-hmm.
You and I met when you were riding the bus and going to school, and I got you convinced to actually register people to vote. Do you want to tell the audience how many people you register riding the bus every day? I remember. Do you remember?
Yes.
How many?
It was about, what, 3,000?
Yep.
Wow. 3,000 people.
I say this because I was in this chamber with Shannon after she registered 3,000 voters. And by the way, we registered 56,000 voters that year. And we register them with people who most people would assume are not people that should be in their leadership development program. I went to soup kitchens. I went to alcohol and drug treatment programs. I went to homeless shelters, and I would walk up to people and go, you look like a leader. You should be in my program, right? They thought I was out of my mind. But guess what? We registered 56,000 people that year, right? So if anybody was crazy, it wasn't us, right? I say that to say that you don't have to have a position. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a title. Because when I met Shannon Olive, she was a student, a single mom, yep, trying to balance working part-time, going to school, and being committed to her community.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to wait till you get in these seats, mm-hmm, to be civically engaged and active and voting and talking to people about voting. I want you to know that my family legacy is my daddy was born and raised in North Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He was raised at a time where Black men, if they made it to Black boys, if they made it to adulthood, it was because they had a mom and dad that kept a thumb on their neck to make sure they really didn't get any trouble. You think you got it bad to see what my dad went through, right? And so I tell you that to say that in this country, voting rights are not secure. It depends totally on what state you live in, what party your Secretary of State belongs to, and whether or not there's a paper trail once you cast your vote. Today in America, black people in many parts of the city still stand in line 8 to 10 hours to vote.
Mm-hmm.
We whine and we got to vote at our kitchen table, and many people don't turn in their ballot,
yeah.
Right? The reality is, even today, there is voter suppression activity. Black communities get notified that their voting place has been moved, that the voting date has been changed. All these tactics have been around ever since we had the jelly bean count test, right? For the elders in the audience, they know what I'm talking about, right? When black people first started trying to register to vote, there'd be this big jar of jelly beans. And you could only register if you could tell them to the exact number how many jelly beans were in that jar, right? So the voter suppression and activity that's happening today is part of that dark legacy that we have around voting rights and who has the opportunity to fully participate in our democracy. And so I applaud CAN for taking on voting rights as this issue for this year, because of course, I say this every election year, but it's absolutely true this year, this is a critical year. They're all critical, but this one more so, because the erosion of our civil rights that have happened over the last 3 years, if somebody had told me 5 years ago that you could wipe out 50 years of civil rights gains in 3 years, I'd have told them no way, right? But here we are, right? But what I know is where we are is temporary, and the work that you will do, one-on-one, eyeball to eyeball with people that look like you to say why their voice matters, and quite frankly, Exhibit A, I would not be sitting here if there had not been people like this audience out willing to knock on doors, willing to make phone calls, willing to step up and say, I know that woman and that woman wants to serve you, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's gonna take. I am not sad. We will get our democracy back. We will be proud again to be Americans, but we can only do that if we fully participate in our democracy.
That's right.
Being here today is fully participating in our democracy. Registering to vote is fully participating in our democracy, right? Showing up and having your voice heard in this chamber and other chambers of power is fully utilizing your democracy. Do not be led to believe that if you just vote, that's the end of the day.
Right.
Because you see what happens when you just vote and go home,
mm-hmm.
right? Bad things happen, right? You got to vote and then you got to stay engaged, mm-hmm. right? So I thank you very much for the opportunity today to really celebrate the historic nature of African Americans' participation in our civic life, because it is vital and it is critical as we move forward that we make sure that our voices are centered.
Mm-hmm.
There are many places today that I feel like the African-American voice has disappeared. It's invisible
mm-hmm.
because we talk about it in cold words, right? We talk about people of color without acknowledging that Native Americans are our first people here, and African-Americans have a unique, distinctive identity that cannot be articulated in a code word like people of color. Right? So it is important that we hold on to our identity. It's important that we're proud of who we are. And it's very important that we make sure that we show up and participate. I got to tell you, I love, love, love when this chamber's full.
Hmm?
I love looking up and seeing people in the balcony, right? This is what, this chamber should always look like this. Look around, look how diverse this chamber is, right? This is the city that we want to live in. This is the city that we're proud of. I'm proud to serve you. I am here not because I wanted a position, but because I wanted to be a public servant, and I thought here would be the best place to do it. And so this seat, I'm not going to be here that long, so you, like, keep doing what you're doing, and then come on back and talk to me about how you get into the seat. All right? All right. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for that pep talk, because I, like many of us, I think are very anxious about the outcome of November election, and I'm not talking about my race, which is of much less consequence than our presidential election. So this year's theme is especially pertinent, not just because it's an election year, but because of the reinvigorated attempts to disenfranchise black voters in states across the country. We can feel proud to live in a state that consistently ranks number one in the country for ease of voting, but the work to enfranchise voters is never done. And this was a conversation we had with Karen yesterday. Who's slipping through the cracks, despite the fact we feel like we have this kind of foolproof system now with motor voter and mail-in ballots? Even with those measures in place, there are still members of our community who face barriers to participation, especially among communities of color, immigrant and refugee communities, youth, elders, and people experiencing homelessness. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Oregon does not have a proud history when it comes to the rights of African Americans. I want to acknowledge it's been less than 100 years since black people could live in Oregon by law, and it's been less than 100 years since black people were granted the right to vote, which is a story that often gets lost when we celebrate the past.
That's what we meant to, right?
Yeah. In 2018, my office led a nonpartisan, content-neutral initiative to encourage voter participation in Portland's precincts with the lowest voter turnout. That was voter turnout less than 50%. These precincts were primarily in East Portland, and the populations are predominantly people of color. So like I said, there's more work to do. I want to say that I feel awkward, I guess, as a white person telling African Americans and other people of color that you should, you know, overcome your doubts and cynicism about our system and go vote, because voting really matters. I don't think I'm the one you need to hear that from. But I want to acknowledge that cynicism is a reasonable response to really unreasonable treatment and outcomes for your communities. But I also want to say that the people in power are counting on that cynicism and counting on your continued disenfranchisement and counting on you not believing that your vote matters. So that's what I want to say about that. When I was running for office, I had multiple people tell me not to bother canvassing in East Portland because people in East Portland don't donate, they don't vote, and the terrain's trough because there aren't a lot of sidewalks out there, which is something to talk about a lot at City Council. This is part of the vicious cycle. If we're not out there engaging the whole community and getting out the vote throughout the whole community,
engaging,
it's never going to change. And
yes,
so we ignored them. We
that's right.
Distributed 25,000 comic books about our rent crisis in East Portland. And we saw, I mean, we're seeing increasing turnout. So I want to thank CAN and the City African American Network and Commissioner Hardesty for organizing this celebration, and thank all of you for the amazing work you do and for being here today.
Well, I'll add my plaudits, and I appreciate this opportunity to bring people in both from the community and also our city employees who are represented here today. And I want to thank you all for your service, because I don't always get the chance to do that. I see my role as being maybe a slightly different role. I mean, look at me, for starters. And one of the areas where I decided I could actually make a difference and where I could be an important ally is speaking clearly and truthfully about the history both of our community and our state. And I think everybody in this room is aware, as Commissioner Udaly said earlier, the history is less than auspicious, and in some cases it's downright ugly. And I felt, once I was here as mayor, that it was my responsibility to not make up for the past, because I don't think you can actually do that. But what I think we do have to do is acknowledge that past so that we can move forward together. And I took a couple of concrete steps to do that. I didn't do it myself. I did it working with the African American community, leaders, advocates, community activists, organizations that work with black youth, black adults, and others. And I made a couple of resolutions right up front. Number one, any bureau that I had responsibility for, I was going to seek out the best leadership of those bureaus. And I was very proud to bring in Chief Danielle Outlaws, the first African-American woman to ever serve in that capacity in our city. But it wasn't an easy road to get her here. And I want to remind people that in the application that I drafted for the police chief that I wanted to hire, the very first sentences in that application said, if you want to be the chief of police under my leadership, you must have an understanding of the history of racism in this community. And the reason I felt it was important to say that was because the history of racism in this community manifests itself today through the systems and the power structures and the biases that we have in place. And it's our job to recognize those things so that we can change them. And it was notable that within my own police bureau, our African-American police officers felt it was essential that that language be in the application for the police chief. There were others in the bureau who thought I was accusing all of our police officers of being racist, which I most certainly was not. So that was waypoint number one. Then it came to urban planning. And let's be honest, Portland's history of urban planning, if you think about the historic Albina neighborhood, for example, the freeways always go through the path of least resistance. The urban development that causes widespread displacement go through the poorest communities. And in our case here in the city, it was our historic African-American communities that were uprooted and displaced. And I worked with this council to say, you know what, we're going to do something different about that. And what we decided to do differently was on the Southwest Corridor, for example, which will be the next large transportation project in this region, this council decided we are not going to support the transportation program unless the displacement question is thoroughly addressed first. And related to that was a study that we put out just a few weeks ago. Some of you may have seen it, and it was deliberately titled very bluntly. It was titled, The Racist History of Urban Development in Portland. And it was presented right here at this dais where you are. And the people who work today are city employees who work in the bureaus that are responsible for urban planning recited the racist history of urban planning in this city. And so it was almost a self-critique that we were going through and a self-acknowledgement and a journey of discovery for some, but a recitation of the truth that many others have known for generations, and they've known it personally. And it was important, I think, to close that gap. I made a point of listening to the community when it was public safety and we stood up the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing. I felt it was important when we got to the so-called Hill Block, now called the North Williams and Russell development, which was historically part of the Black community, and it was uprooted through a series of very racist and intentional decisions to displace Black families, that the community would guide that redevelopment. Not me, not City Hall, not anybody in elective office, but we would let the community lead that process going forward. And then when it came to shared economic prosperity, that was critically important to me as well. And that's why the first economic development strategy coming out of my office was something called Portland Means Progress, which is to get young people of color with a focus on young Black individuals in this community into good employment situations, and then to encourage our many, many businesses in this community to seek out partners first who are led by communities of color, so women, minority entrepreneurs of color, and with a focus of 60% at a minimum being people of color who are leaders in those areas in their own rights, being partnered up. And the third was for organizations to commit and demonstrate fundamentally a culture of inclusivity and diversity. Those things are all important. But getting to the question of voting, As I said in my opening remarks, and I'm sorry I didn't read them quite as well as I would have liked to have, but the intent is there. The reality is there's a long history of trying to disenfranchise and get rid of the black vote here in the United States of America. And what Commissioner Hardesty said a moment ago really, really struck me. I always thought civil rights and civil liberties were earned the hard way, sometimes through the shedding of blood. But I believe that once those battles won, it was sort of like a gear. And once you got the Voter Rights Act, once you got the Civil Rights Act, and on other issues, once women had earned the right to make decisions about their own bodies and choice, that those things, those were battles fought and battles won. And if we've learned anything over the last 3 years, we learned how naive that perspective is. Your civil rights and your civil liberties have to be fought for and earned every single day, because there will always be somebody out there who wants to deprive you of both. And this next election is a bellwether.
Yes.
And I fundamentally believe this. I do not believe it is hyperbole to say, I'm not supposed to be too political, but I'm going to say it. If the current administration's philosophy with regard to women and people of color, particularly the black community, and immigrants, particularly those who come from Mexico, if that philosophy is allowed to prevail for a second term, I believe it will be generations before this nation overcomes it. And I don't want to have to go through that. And so, young people, Caleb, thank you for everything you do. The reality is young people are already shaping the agenda.
Yes.
You know, in this city, young people are on the lead in two key areas, school safety and guns related to that. Yeah. And the second area is the climate. Without the youth movement in this city, we would not be talking about those issues to the degree that we can.
That
was a longer statement than I wanted to make, but since you guys were all so timely,
I know, right?
I got to go on a little longer, except to say I'm really proud to be here and sit here as mayor in a city like this with people like all of you. It really is an honor to be the mayor, especially at times like this. So thank you very much.
And so I have the honor of reading the proclamation, but it's from the entire city council. And then we would love to have a group picture for all who can fit up to make that happen when it's done. And then maybe you want to tell us about the fun activities that are going to happen later.
Definitely.
Before I read the resolution, the proclamation.
Yeah,
would you be so kind?
Yes, that'd be great. So we plan this great reception down in the atrium, and we've partnered with Multnomah County Elections, Greg Benavides from their voter education and outreach program there.
Wonderful.
And so Greg is going to be tabling down below and basically there to answer questions that people have about who can register to vote, when can you register to vote, where can you register to vote, how, and all the timing questions that people have. There's a lot of misconceptions about who can vote, and a lot of those misconceptions are passed through communities that the main folks don't want to vote. So I think Greg is going to be there to help kind of dissolve some of those mysteries, and also has paperwork to get people signed up, registered to vote.
And so that's going to be as soon as we adjourn here, we're going to go down to the atrium?
Yes, yes. We also, we have some performers from YGB, Young Gifted in Black, and so we'll hear and get to hear some of that when we go down. We've got some snacks and water for people to drink.
All right. Hey, you can only do what you got budget to do, right? But
right.
We're all good about that.
Okay.
Anything else?
Yes, I just want to quickly say, like, I just want to give a shout out to our three speakers here. Can we all give them a round of applause? It's not easy to come into this space. especially when this space was not built with us in mind.
That's right.
So it takes a lot to come in here, and to get here, for one, to be able to afford to come down here during this time. And then also, you know, the distrust from African American communities towards this city in particular is pretty immense. And so for people to kind of look past that and to come in and inhabit this space is pretty major. So
what I hope is that this is not your last time in this chamber. What I hope is that even when you're unable to show up, that you will see that at least in the year that I've been here, this chamber is full of our community, right? There was a period where people stopped coming because of some other issues, but I am so proud when I walk into this chamber because there are people that come that really don't have any vested interest in the outcome, but they come because they care about the city, and they come to see what we're doing in person rather than see us on TV. And so I wanna, and I'm sure that the mayor and commissioner, you daily, will join me in this invitation. This is your house. You have every right to be here every time the city council is in session.
Thank you.
Okay, I am now gonna read the proclamation, and then we'll take pictures, and then we'll go have some fun and watch some dancers move their bodies, and that'll be cool. All right. Whereas the city of Portland takes pride in joining Americans throughout the country in recognizing February 2020 as Black History Month. Whereas Black History Month recognizes and pays tribute to the contributions that African Americans have made to American history and their struggles for freedom and equality, and deepens our understanding of our shared history. And whereas the theme for 2020, African Americans and the Vote, acknowledges the historical and modern day challenges of people of African descent for the right to vote and have their voice heard. And whereas many African Americans have long experienced disparities, exclusion, discrimination, and many barriers to being able to cast their vote. Dating back over 100 years, African Americans have had to fight and campaign to have voting rights and be recognized as voters. This fight continues today for many African American people from many walks of life. And whereas generations of African American individuals, families, and communities have played a significant role in protesting the urgency for voting to be barrier-free, inclusive, and non-discriminatory. And whereas African American youth are now the inheritors of a flawed and unjust voting culture that has historically disproportionately oppressed the African American right to have their voice validated, heard, and counted. And whereas African American youth are now leading movements to champion the shift and the stifling of the Black vote, our young voters are motivated to drive out exclusion and discrimination and are not fearful of shedding light on the issue and identifying ways to not only combat, but to win the victory for Black voters. Whereas African Americans are prepared to go to battle for what should be rightfully ours, this preparedness is a part of our narrative and has cultivated our courage, drive, and resilience in the face of adversity and inequality. And whereas to this day, millions of African Americans across the country face coordinating efforts to suppress their right to vote, including racist voter ID laws, racially motivated redistricting, voter roll purges, inequitable resources for African American voting precincts, and countless other efforts to suppress their vote. And whereas our diverse culture enriches and broadens the American experience of which African heritage is inseparable part as it weaves throughout our country's history, profoundly influencing every aspect of our lives. Whereas we commend the many achievements, successes, and contributions of African Americans and voting rights movements as there have been a significant rise of Black elected and appointed officials locally and nationally. And whereas inequality and injustice still lingers in our cities, state, and country, and it is the responsibility of citizens to advance the American notion of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Portland City Council of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim February 2020 as Black History Month in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month. Thank you. All right, picture time.
Great. Can we do one with just the mayor, commissioners, and speakers first, and then we'll ask other people from the community to join?
We are at your disposal.
Wonderful.
Whatever you want.
Almost.
Great to see you again. Where's Grandma?
Sure.